Hi, I'm Leanne Ward.
And I'm Susie Burrell.
And welcome to The Nutrition Couch, a weekly podcast from two of Australia's leading dietitians, bringing you everything that is new in the world of nutrition, diets, and good food. On The Nutrition Couch today, the five-factor diet, the latest Hollywood diet that helped Katy Perry get back into shape. Should we be doing it? And feeling bloated, simple tips to get your digestion back on track. There's a new brand of tuna out, and one of the most common nutrition questions we ask, how do we get rid of those nighttime snacks and munching? How to take control back. But first, Susie, how's your week been?
Hi, Leanne. Well, it's getting a bit chilly down here in Sydney. The days are noticeably shorter, So I've done a little bit of winter shopping, which you probably don't even really need to do because you're in sunny Brisbane. But I've also noticed with my clients, a lot of them are getting a little bit slack in the morning, not getting up for their classes. So I think if you are someone who is not a morning person when it's a bit chilly and a bit dark, it's a great time of year to reassess your workouts and perhaps commit to an upcoming event or enroll in a new program or team up with a friend just to make sure that you maintain those levels of activity. Because if we suddenly reduce activity right through May, June, July, August, you know, that translates into some serious kilo creep over winter. So you heard it here first. It's time to get things on track with your exercise program now that the temperatures are dropping.
And even just some simple lunchtime steps. If you're not someone who likes getting up in the middle of winter at the crack of dawn, which I definitely don't, Susie, some simple steps during your lunch break or, taking an earlier bus stop so you're walking one extra bus stop can just be some really simple ways to get some extra activity in if we're going to drop those early morning gym sessions, which we do not blame you at all. And then what is trending in the media this week, Susie? Have you got a great trending topic for us? What are you hearing?
We don't tend to like diets very much. You know, restrictive diets, people don't like hearing about them. We know that they're very rarely successful long term. But, you know, we have to pay a little bit of attention when a new diet's out there. And one that I noticed this week getting quite a lot of attention was called the five-factor diet. Now, this is, yes, the diet that Katy Perry apparently has used to get her post-baby body. And it's a bit novel. You know, I quite like it. It requires you to have five meals per day, and those meals have to contain five components. So the components are some fiber, some good quality carbohydrate, a certain amount of protein, a sugar-free beverage. I think it's a vegetable is the fifth factor. And then the exercise component is five different exercises completed for 5 minutes, so a total of 25 minutes of exercise per day. Now, I think it's quite quirky and quite smart. You know, it's fairly simple in the sense that it's about all the fives. And compared to some of the diets that we see, which can be, you know, ranging from juice fasts to shakes to really extreme programs, nutritionally, I think it's not too bad. It's just that it requires probably a fair amount of preparation to create those meals.
It's definitely not overly restrictive like some of the other ones we've seen and heard of, is it?
100%. You know, first of all, there's plenty of regular meals. You know, one of the issues with diets, as you know well, is people get really hungry and then they tend to binge eat after they're feeling restricted. So I think with five meals a day, but one thing I did think was that creating those kind of meals would be a little bit tricky. Like, I don't even know what kind of meal would fit that profile. Can you think of what that mix would be? It's like,
oh, it's simple. You know, it would be like chicken, quinoa, broccoli, maybe a serve of fat. I think that's one of the components. A little bit of avocado and a green tea or something would be a sugar-free beverage. So I think that it's fine and it seems pretty simple, but I also think that boredom might be a factor for some people because you couldn't fit, I don't know, something like tacos or nachos or something into that. I don't know how burgers are going to fit into that because, you know, by the time you're just looking at the burger bun, you're over your carb amount anyway. And then if you wanted to add fries to that, don't even think about it, Susie.
I think if you looked at what's going on nutritionally, you're right. It's slightly lower in carbohydrate. It's probably 30 to 40% carbohydrate working off one carb per meal, not dissimilar to the zone. I think it would suit a celebrity who had a full-time chef to prepare those meals, which I'd say probably Katy Perry probably has.
Absolutely.
For the average person, I think not only getting that balance right, but actually preparing that number of meals. Like, I have trouble trying to get my clients to prepare one meal. But the exercise isn't too intensive. I think that you'll get results if you can do it for any extended period of time. And as far as diets go, I think it's reasonably safe compared to some of the ones we see. But as I said, perhaps just a little bit labor intensive long term. And, you know, we never know actually how long the celebrities do it for or if in fact they even do it at all.
And what else they're doing on the side. Hint, hint, maybe some plastic surgery, who knows? But it was designed by a nutritionist and a personal trainer, so it's not like it was a celebrity-designed diet. So, you know, at least he's got some qualifications to back it up as well.
That's true. Yeah. And I think the other standout thing is that it's all well and good if you're preparing food at home and eating at home all the time, but let's be honest, I think the statistics in Australia are that 30% of the calories are consumed away from the home. Mm. So if you are trying to replicate that meal in a food court or cafe, it's going to be really difficult, because it would be like one small slice of toast with one egg, a sliver of avocado. Mm. The toast would have to be whole grain or wholemeal.
And no butter.
And no butter. And then you would also then have to have a herbal tea with it. Forget your coffee. So, you know, a little bit more technical if you're eating out regularly. So even if you could maintain it for the first half of the week, it's going to be tricky when it comes to Sunday brunch.
Yeah, and there's definitely no mention of alcohol and, you know, I think a glass of wine on a Friday or a Saturday night, Susie, is one of my favourite things. I don't do it every weekend, but it definitely is something that I wouldn't want to give up for a full, you know, 8 weeks, 12 weeks or something like that.
Well, that's the thing with these diets. They don't factor that in. When I'm modelling for clients, I always factor in a meal or two off a week. Now, as I remind clients, that's not a day off. It's one meal
or a cheat weekend. And that cheat weekend
allows you, if you have, you know, a few drinks or, but there's often very little room to move in that space there. What do you do? Do you let them?
Yeah, absolutely. I call them soul food. So I say, you know, what are your favourite things in the entire world? You want a glass of wine? Fabulous. We're not going to have wine, chips, cheese and chocolate though. You know, you're going to pick one or two things that you want the most on any given day and we'll work that in for you. So it's really just that trade-off between, you know, really choosing the one thing they want that day, then knowing that they can have a little bit more later in the week or in a couple of days or something, not kind of that all or nothing approach a lot of people go to on the weekend. Is like, you know, they write off the weekend, it's a full cheat weekend, they get back on track by Monday, but the damage is already done. So
they're kind of on or off the program.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I like to build it in, you know, if they want some chocolate on a Tuesday, that's cool. If they want a glass of wine on a Thursday, that can fit. If they want some ice cream on a Saturday, that's cool too. So we're picking, you know, one or two soul foods, not everything all at once.
No, I like that. So overall, the five-factor diet, if you see it, I think it's reasonably sound compared to some of the ones that are out there. Mm. Bit labour-intensive, yes. 25 minutes of training, that's quite nice.
Yeah.
That's not too bad. So, you know, there's far worse out there and not too bad a review in general.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, any diet works as long as you can stick to it. So if you read that and you think absolutely not, then it's not even probably something worth even considering, because if you can't maintain it, you're not going to get those results. You're not going to maintain the results that you do get within those 4 weeks if you just revert back to your old behaviours. So whatever you do choose in terms of an eating pattern, it has to be a lifestyle approach, not a diet.
And it's funny actually, I had to write a piece on the five top celebrity diets and the worst five. Mm. And I actually put this in my top five among with plant fasting, because I thought that the principles were quite strong. Yeah. You know, it's not eliminating food groups or anything like that.
And you don't have to count calories either, which is nice.
Yeah,
it's got more of a whole food focus.
And it includes exercise. So it was in my top five, but it is competing against some pretty brutal others.
That Mediterranean diet, there's definitely some great evidence behind that.
But yeah, no, compared to some of the ones out there, I thought it was on the better side. So that was good. All right, so with case study of the week, and I definitely am asked this a lot, and you've had quite a few inquiries about bloating and feeling discomfort in the tummy. And I do wonder if it's because people are really back at work now, it's after the holidays, we're sitting a lot more. So that's my observation that always tends to play havoc. But tell us about your experience with bloating.
Yeah, so we had I had a client this week, Susie. First off, what we identified was just, you know, living in active wear. So wearing super tight yoga pants all day long actually contributes to bloating as well. So I find that for a lot of clients, if you're wearing really restrictive clothing or you go to the gym in your gym tights, maybe you didn't sweat too much, you kind of hang around in them all day, wearing those super tight lycra around your stomach all day, particularly if you're like, you know, in a hormonal week or you've got your period or something like that, it's only going to make that bloating worse. So get out of your tight tights and get into some sweatpants. That's going to help with bloating. We want things that are moving through properly, Susie. So we want fiber, we want water, and we want physical activity. So slowly increase fiber can be a really simple solution to get things moving properly through, basically. So a lot of bloating is actually related to sluggish bowels or even some constipation. And we know that with a lot of constipation, people aren't drinking enough, they're not moving enough, and they're simply not eating enough fiber for the majority of people, not for every single person. But bloating has a really, really close link to just those sluggish bowels. So I think if you are someone who suffers regularly from bloating, that's a great place to start. And then, of course, linking in with a dietitian one-on-one, because there are lots of, you know, personal intolerances and that sort of things which can aggravate people's guts as well.
I've got two things to say in response to that. The first is I have never in all my years heard about the gym pants being an issue for your stomach. That is so interesting.
I have a history of IBS myself, and let me tell you, if I'm having a more distended day, it will be sweatpants for me. There's no way I can live in my tights. They are way too uncomfortable. And they just make it worse as the day goes on.
And I'm assuming, as someone who does do some TV work, that Spanx would also be a problem.
I don't wear Spanx. I wore them once on my wedding and, oh my God, I wanted to rip them off the entire night and I've never gone back.
So 100%, if the workout pants have caused this problem,
yeah,
100%
living in Spanx all day is not going to help you ladies out at all.
I'm learning something that's fantastic. And the other question I have is because you do tend to do a bit more gut stuff than I do, what are your go-to high-fiber foods?
Oh, I love, 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 love. Not sponsored, guys, on this podcast, but love the range of Vetta high-fiber pasta. Find that's really great. The legume-based pasta as well, like lentil pasta, chickpea pasta. I'm really loving – my favorite brand for muesli bars used to be the Barley Plus bars. I believe they've been taken off market now, and I've been recommending for my clients the Heritage Trail prebiotic bars. They're super high in fiber as well. And then you can get some really great wraps and breads as well, which – and even some types of cereals as well, which can give you a good boost in terms of fiber. Ideally, if you are someone that's blocked up and you eat enough fiber, you just want to boost yourself a little bit, aim for about 10 grams breakfast, 10 grams at lunch, 10 grams at dinner. It's going to give you an easy 30 grams. So with fiber, the number one thing to remember, Susie, is to increase slowly. You go too quickly with fiber or give yourself too much, you're going to make that bloating and uncomfortable feeling a lot worse.
And of course, you have to match it with plenty of fluid to move it through, because that's another rookie error, is to load up the fiber and not drink enough water. So you definitely want at least 2 liters of water. My favorite cereal is actually, I'm a big fan of All Bran.
Yeah.
Now, I know that it does contain some added sugar, so on cereal comparisons, it doesn't fare well. But if you've got upset tummy and can tolerate wheat fiber, it is one of the best things at getting things moving. Mm-hmm. The other product I really have always liked is the Sanitarium multigrain wheat mix. I don't know if they're called multigrain anymore, but I've always loved that. They've got a really high soluble fiber load to them. Yeah. And then there's also a new range of digestive well-being Helga's bread, which have got really high dose of barley max as one of their base flours. Yep. So that's another product. So that's the other thing, I think, listeners, is that for people who are interested in gut-related health or do suffer from bloating and have sensitive tummies, you'll see more and more products in supermarkets now that really are targeting digestive well-being. And it's a broad term, 100%. It's not regulated. But in general, you'll find that they tend to be higher in different types of fiber that are proven to help promote gut comfort. Mm-hmm. So definitely worth seeking those out. And they range from both the mainstream section and the health food section. So that could be all products, because those ones you've mentioned as well are quite specific developed.
And without
for gut
mentioning,
comfort.
Again, products and brands, one of my favorite breakfast thing is just is simply overnight oats. Overnight oats with chia seeds. I just buy a bag of home brand oats, cheapest chips, you know, $1, $2 for the bag. Soak them in some milk overnight with some chia seeds, put some fruit on in the morning, and happy as Larry, gets things moving through. That and a morning coffee will do the trick.
Because the caffeine is that stimulant. That's why sometimes after you've had breakfast of eggs and coffee, it's very good at getting your tummy sorted. But in saying that, I love that as a breakfast for people who are busy, because you can make it the night before and it's that grab and go. And more of my clients are loving those grab and go breakfast options, and that is particularly good, because if you're picking up breakfast at the coffee shop, it's really hard to get a high fiber option, because the bread's normally white sourdough or a white wrap.
Yes.
The yogurts and stuff we choose don't have a lot of sort of whole grain or fruit to them. So much, much better from a cost perspective and money perspective, as well nutritionally as if you make one of those, whether it's a whole grain breakfast wrap on the digestive health type bread or overnight oats. That works really well and very budget friendly.
Absolutely. And soaking them as well is quite gentle on your tummy if you've got a bit of an upset tummy or something like that as well.
Very helpful.
So continuing on our product discussion, Susie, what product of the week have you got for our listeners today?
This is a really fascinating product, and I've seen a lot of dietitians commenting on it because it's such a standout. So it's a tuna. It's a John West tuna, which is one of the big tuna brands. And for the first time ever, I have seen it with added calcium. So there's a couple of different flavors. It's just in the normal 90 gram tin. But the calcium that's in it, as opposed to being an added calcium, which can be the case in, say, plant-based milks where they're adding it in, this has actually taken the tuna bones, ground them up, and added that back into the tuna itself. Now, we've always known that tinned salmon, which has got the bones in it, is a really rich source of calcium. Like a tinned salmon will give you 200-300 milligrams of calcium if you eat those bones. And because they're that soft bone, it breaks down quite easily if you mash it in. Tuna, we've been less likely to have that in there. And so the most interesting thing is those cans have got about 800 milligrams of calcium per serve.
A lot.
Which is massive because at most a postmenopausal woman or at high risk of fractures will need 1,300 milligrams per day, which is really hard to get from dietary sources, particularly if you don't have dairy. But this would be one of the richest, fairly natural sources of non-dairy-based calcium in a food I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
So I thought it was just a fascinating product.
Yeah. And for reference for our listeners, a cup of cow's milk generally has what, about 300 milligrams of calcium? Yeah. So 800 in a tin of tuna is huge.
It's huge. And I've done a little bit of research. I've chatted to a few dietitians online myself and just researching it to see, is it actually good to be having such a large dose of calcium in one go?
In one hit, yeah.
Because what we know from other nutrients is that if you give too much, it's either excreted or it's not good for the body to be exposed to such concentrated amounts. Now, I haven't had any evidence or feedback back that it is a concern.
Mm.
It's not dangerous. And indeed, it's going to be a million times better than a supplementary form of calcium purely because it's being consumed within a whole food, and the synergistic effect of all the other nutrients in that tuna, like the protein, the magnesium, is always good to enhance absorption. But yeah, I can't help but say that for anyone who struggles with their calcium intake, who has osteopenia, the precursor to osteoporosis, brittle bones, struggles with dairy, you can't. That's an amazing product to include to really increase your calcium intake.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'd say the only caution I could think off the top of my head would be renal disease, really, or problems with
for
your kidneys.
For someone, that's a good point. Mm. For anyone who was needing to look at protein loads or any of those element intake 100%.
Potassium,
so definitely
calcium.
Consult your dietitian or specialist about that. But, you know, for a retail price, I think they're about a dollar each. It's a good price point. And, you know, we love tin fish for a range of reasons. So now I'd be saying definitely once or twice a week, particularly if you're a calcium intake, although that's a really smart choice. So
Absolutely. Very
interesting product. And I think we'll just see more and more of that in supermarkets when people realize in Australia we don't necessarily get enough calcium.
Yeah. Yep. So Susie, we'll pop those ones on our social media profile, which if you guys want to follow us on socials, we're on Facebook and Instagram at the Nutrition Couch Podcast. And we'll pop some photos up of that tinned high calcium tuna.
And we've had a few people pop some photos up themselves of products that they're very interested in. We find that really helpful, particularly listening to people from other states. So feel free to get in on the conversation. We love to hear from you and we love your feedback on the podcast. So thank you for tuning in.
Absolutely.
So our final segment of today is, I think, personally and also professionally, one of the greatest nutrition areas or issues that I see, and I've been guilty of it, is that you have your dinner and you're trying to be healthy and you sit down and watch the telly, whatever your favorite reality television or Netflix is, and you crave something sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I'm dealing with clients myself, I will generally factor in something small if that's their preference. So if they love to have a biscuit or a chocolate afterwards, myself, full disclosure, I generally have something sweet with a cup of tea. I try and keep it at about 100 calories. But for me, I'm quite good at regulating that, and that's my eating cutoff for the night once I've had that. But I've also heard you say, which I really love and want to explore a bit more, that eating after dinner is actually a bad habit.
Mm.
So I thought this is going to resonate with so many listeners who overeat and snack after dinner. I thought there's a lot to explore here.
So tell
me your thoughts on the after dinner habits.
Yeah, I'm probably the opposite, Susie. I don't tend to eat after dinner. Very occasionally, once a week, I might have a glass of wine or I might have a couple of squares of chocolate, maybe once or twice a week maximum. But I'm more of a fan of, for my clients as well as myself, adding those things in throughout the day, because I do find for a lot of people, it's more of a habit than not actually hungry. And when I ask my clients, I'm like, okay, if you're hungry, you know, let's have, I don't know, like some carrots and some dip or a piece of fruit or yogurt. And they're like, no, it has to be something sweet or it has to be chocolate, which then tells me that it's not true physical hunger. So I like to distinguish between hunger as head hunger and tummy hunger. So have you got the munchies up top where you're just really craving something because it has been linked to or associated with a habit such as finally sitting down, you know, the kids are in bed, you're relaxing in front of the TV and your body just goes, oh, I need something sweet now. Or is that genuine physical hunger where perhaps you haven't had enough to eat for dinner and you actually do need a little bit more food? So I'm purely talking, Susie, about that hunger that is that head hunger where you're not physically hungry. It just may be something like a habit where the more sugar you have, the more that becomes a habit and the more sugar your body wants. And that's that sad little cycle we can get caught in, which is really hard to break out of. So I generally say to my clients, do you crave something sweet after breakfast? Do you crave something sweet after lunch? And 99.9% of the time, they're like, no. And it's like just after dinner. now. And I'm like, well, it comes back to those habits. And if you go and you do something different, if you finish your dinner, if the light's still on in the kitchen, it looks really inviting, you plonk yourself down on your couch and 5 seconds later, you're like, oh, I need something sweet. Change that pattern and change that those behaviors that you do. So turn the light off in the kitchen, make it less inviting, go upstairs and brush your teeth, get into your pajamas, get ready for bed, then come back down and relax and watch a little bit of TV. So brushing my teeth to me signals like the end of eating and drinking for the night. I'm not going to go brush my teeth, then come downstairs and have a glass of orange juice or come downstairs and eat a piece of chocolate because I've got that nice minty fresh breath. I don't want to ruin that. So for me and my clients, that's a really easy strategy that they can use. I'm not against them eating after dinner, but I do find I work with clients and the majority of their goal is around fat loss. It's an easier way to keep them in a deficit, put it that way. And if they want those foods, they can have a little bit of chocolate with their afternoon tea, that sort of thing, because it does become more of that habit, which again makes it really hard to break out of if we're constantly craving things every night.
The research would absolutely show it's a programming effect. So after 2 or 3 days of the same habit, the brain will then seek that out. So if every night you currently have a tea and associate that with something sweet, and then you have one biscuit, it's not going to be as satisfying over time. You're going to need two. And that's how people over time generally overeat. It becomes a programming effect. I think for me, I often leave it up to my clients whether they break the habit because it's actually becoming more of a hindrance, or if they're happy to regulate it by choosing something that signifies the end of the day. And I do aim for about less than 100 calories. And I definitely like an eating cutoff time. I think that's a very powerful programmer. One, to give the body that 10, 12, 14 hours without food, which we know is good for us. And the truth be known, if we were looking at it from a nutritional perspective, having something like a slice of cheese would actually be better for things like the teeth if we were looking purely from what's better physiologically. But I love that question, a simple check-in with yourself to say, am I actually genuinely hungry or is it that habitual habit? And if it is, if I want to break it, for me, working with clients on breaking a habit, you've got to take them out in the environment because that's so powerful. So if you really want to break that night eating habit, you're going to have to get out of probably the lounge room where the TV's on because your brain is expecting to do that. So it's about doing something different, which is not as easy this time of year when it's a bit cold. You're not going to go for a walk. But that would be my other tip. If you're keen to actually stop it, you've got to get out of that habit of watching TV because as soon as you sit down, everything in your body will be programming you to have something sweet. And the other thing I would say off the back of that, and I've had this conversation several times this week with my clients, if you've got Easter eggs left in the house, they've got to go, people.
They've got to go. Yep. Couldn't agree more. 100%. Yeah. And for me, like Easter eggs, like I always say to clients, eat food that gives you the most maximal satisfaction. If not, like for me, I don't eat Cadbury chocolate because I could eat the whole block and still not feel satisfied. It just doesn't do it for me. Whereas if I had one square of good quality dark Lindt chocolate with like sea salt caramel in it, that to me, just half a square of that gives me so much satisfaction. So I always say like Easter eggs for me just don't cut it. So I don't need Easter eggs because it's just chocolate. It's just in an Easter egg. For me, it doesn't give me that satisfaction. So I don't even go through the habit of buying Easter eggs at Easter time. I'll buy chocolate, but it's the type of chocolate that gives me maximal satisfaction. I don't buy into the whole Easter egg kind of situation because I don't find milk chocolate satisfying at all. I very much enjoy either white chocolate or dark chocolate because I just feel it gives me personally way more satisfaction. So I think we are programmed and conditioned to do things just because it is that time of year and that sort of thing. So if you like Easter eggs, enjoy them. But as you mentioned, get them out of the house if your goal is weight loss or even just from a health perspective, because let's be totally honest, Susie, like chocolate in large amounts isn't healthy for us, regardless of if your goal is weight loss or not.
And if they're there, you absolutely will eat them. Another trick actually with the Easter eggs I have is to melt them down and you can do like a fondue for the kids or dip it on a platter.
With some fruit, maybe.
So you don't, or give them away, like give them to someone else. Just get them out of there 100%.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know where it came from where we give each other Easter eggs at Easter time. I don't know where that came from, but
marketing.
Yeah. Marketing. Yeah. Not a great habit if your goal is fat loss or to get rid of some of those, Christmas kilos that you put on. If they're still hanging around at Christmas time, it's not going to be ideal if you've got bags of Easter eggs all through your pantry.
They've got to go.
All right, Susie, that pretty much brings us to the end of our podcast this week. And finally, for our listeners, let us know, what are you obsessed with? What's trending in Susie's world this week?
Well, I haven't quite got to suits yet, but I will. But I have been making this fantastic soup that I get obsessed with things 100% and in particularly certain recipes. And this is one of the easiest soups and it's so delicious and it's a great time of year to have it. And all it is some onion, garlic, celery, tomato passata, chicken stock and some cannellini beans with some kale thrown in at the end. the recipe's on my Instagram page, and we'll also add it to our Nutrition Couch podcast pages on Facebook and Instagram, so you can all enjoy it as much as I do. Mm. And literally at the start of the week, I cook up a batch. I throw some Parmesan in it. It is a light, delicious dinner that just leaves you so satisfied because it's so rich in fiber and fluid, and I just am having it every single week. And people ask me for recipes all the time, and that's great, but I tend to make the same thing over and over again. So if you are looking for a really nutrient-dense, warming soup, I cannot recommend this highly enough. So as I said, we'll post the recipe up so you also can enjoy it.
That sounds delicious.
That's delicious. So that brings us to the end of the Nutrition Couch for this week. We are loving your messages on both the Nutrition Couch podcast Facebook and Instagram page, so keep them coming, and we look forward to chatting again next week. Thanks for listening.